This is a Pinball News production.
Can you guys hear me all right if I don't use the mic, or do I need to be on the mic for recording?
No, you're good.
Use it?
Use it.
Hello, everybody that's listening to this on the tape later. All right.
Hey, yeah, my name is Paul Mandeltort. I am, as he said, the VP of Product Marketing / Engineering / Management, however you want to cut it, depending on what day of the week it is. But I am here today to talk to you about LEDs. So I'm sure all of you have noticed LEDs are becoming pretty popular in pinball machines for a variety of factors. There's still a bit of a fog factor within the realm of LEDs. So I hope to help kind of dispel some myths and explain some of the fundamentals around LEDs and how they work, and just some more information that should be useful to you next time you go to outfit a machine with LEDs in there. So just a quick show of hands, I'd like to see who I'm talking to here. Who's actually got a game with LEDs in it already? All right, so you can go home. You already know all this stuff. I don't know why you're here. who is any other electrical engineers in the room? Okay, so I'm also an electrical engineer, and being that you heard that it's 3 o'clock and you haven't fallen asleep already, I dumbed it down because I personally, as an engineer, don't like being bored with all the really raw details and everything. So I kept this presentation at a high level, so I apologize if I insult you by how easy it is. But at the same time, hopefully, maybe you get some refreshers or little fundamentals from, I don't know how long ago y'all got out of school, but for me it's been about 10 years already. So anyway, without further ado, go ahead and move on here. What we're going to talk about today, why are LEDs becoming popular in pinball machines? Probably, you can probably guess, you've come to the same conclusions if you've already gotten them for your games. I'll give you some comparisons, LEDs versus incandescent bulbs. What some of the problems that we've seen with LEDs and how the product has evolved to fix those problems down the road. And just some general pointers and tips to remember when trying to discern the dozens of LEDs on the market today. Over at market, we've got over 150 different types of LEDs in stock. And one of the most frequent phone calls we get is, which LEDs do I need for my game? So hopefully, the goal of this session is to cut down on some of those phone calls. So we'll see how we do today. Really, just to start with, why are LEDs becoming popular in the first place? Really, the temperature is one of the greatest advantages of an LED. If any of you have been down to any of the museums around here, in particular Pacific Pinball Museum, or any game room that's got a couple dozen pinball machines there, it's hot. And most of that heat is coming off the lamps in the game. They're lower power. This is why they're also used. The vivid colors are a huge advantage of the LEDs. The incandescent bulbs are only white, and you have to use a filter to get the color that you want, whereas LEDs can emit pure colors, which is very advantageous to make it a nice-looking game. LEDs are also much more directional than an incandescent bulb, so you can get a lot more spotlight-type effects and other effects that just weren't available with incandescents. The longer lifespan is a huge attraction, especially if anybody changed lamps and pop bumper assemblies before. Yeah, so that's definitely very useful. And the vibration resistance kind of goes hand-in-hand with the life. And finally, we've seen in the last 5 or 10 years, people are really trying to add a custom look to the games. And LEDs are one of the easiest and most visual ways to do that in a game without, you know, putting too much work into it. So first we'll start off with, what are the difference between LEDs and incandescent lamps? The power consumption is really the key thing here. An average LED takes about 0.1, 0.2 watts depending on the brightness. Some of the super bright ones can take up to 40, 50 milliamps. Whereas a regular lamp takes 1.5 watts. So when you add up all the lamps in the games, you have over 100 watts of incandescent light just cooking off your game all the time. This is bad for a number of reasons. It can warp plastics, discolor things in the games. It can raise the operating temperature of the boards, cause other things to fail earlier. Heat is bad in electronics, as all you EEs know in the room. And lamps are just the main contributor to that problem. The lifespan, of course, is significantly different. You're looking at over 30,000 hours for LEDs versus an average of 3,000 hours, depending on which lamp. Some of the brighter ones are even as low as a few hundred hours. So it really just depends on which lamp you're talking about here. And again, the colors are one of the biggest visual differences as well. Why are LEDs just now becoming popular? Why didn't Bally and Williams and Gottlieb and the rest of the crew back in the 70s and 80s wise up and use LEDs in the old games? And really, this very simple answer is cost is the main reason. Only recently have LEDs dropped to a price point now where they are becoming effective. In fact, if you look at the new Stern machines, you're starting to see Stern put more and more LEDs into the games. They start with the hard-to-reach places like the pop bumper caps, and you can expect to see them using more and more as it goes on. So with that in mind, you can now, an average collector can take a game which you may have bought for $3,000 or $4,000, and now the retrofit is under $100. That becomes attractive, especially when you're trying to boost that resale value of the game. There's been some innovation and investment in the packages for the game. So in the past, if you're the true hacker mentality, you can run down to Radio Shack, get an LED, and solder it into the sockets, and you know that'd be a bit of work, but it works. But now we've seen a lot of products on market addressed specifically for drop-in replacements. So that really takes the headaches out of dropping these LEDs into your games. And of course, and there's also a side trend of this recent pinball machine is becoming more attractive in the collector's market. So over the last 10 years, we've seen a huge surge in from machines going from commercial to home installations. And in those cases, LEDs and making the machine prettier are more common. So a commercial operator is less likely to put them in a game because they don't want to put that much money into a game versus like home collector slash arcade wants the game to be as pretty as possible. You're going to see be much more likely to have LEDs in that case. But of course, with all their advantages, LEDs are not without their problems. And I think, especially those of you who've already installed LEDs in the games, you've probably already noticed some of those problems. But we'll go how what those are, how you can address them, and where to see them. One of the first biggest problems, especially the earlier generation LEDs, was color temperature. So who here can spot an LED game from a mile away? And how do you spot it? Yeah, it's blue. Yeah, you can get a suntan off of it, right? It's got, you know, it's very bluish. And that's because the color temperature on cheaper LEDs is more bluish. And we'll go into why that is in a second. The polarity issue. So how you bought an LED, you put it in, it just doesn't turn on because you got it backwards or something. So it's because LEDs are diodes. We'll talk about that in a second. The strobing effect, which I think is the greatest one, which you get spending 2 hours in the game, you turn on, looks great, you think you did a great job, then you go to play it, and then you get a headache and pass out, and it's like you watched the latest 3D movie. You know, it's just it's painful. And that's due to some design decisions that are made with incandescence in mind. And I've had this one since the last time I gave this talk, was ghosting, or LEDs just staying on all the time, especially in Williams games. I'll talk about that in a second. So really, you know, with all these LEDs on the planet, and so little time, we're all busy, we all got more games to retrofit, so hopefully we'll help you sort that out. So really the first problem, color temperature. And when we get into this discussion, it really helps to understand how incandescent bulbs work, because there's some similarities and crossovers from that area. So does anybody, basically incandescent bulbs, they work, very simple mechanism actually. You can take anything at all, you make it really hot, you know, get it really, really hot, and then it's going to glow. And it doesn't matter what it is, it's going to glow. Now, some things tend to burn and disappear after a little bit when you make them a few thousand degrees, but that's how incandescent bulbs work. They figured out how to keep it really hot without disintegrating. And the color that you get from that really hotness is actually the color is directly proportional to the temperature of how hot the thing is. So in this case, with an incandescent bulb, you've got a filament there. It gets up to about 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the bulb in your pinball machine. You got about 100 little mini suns in your game, practically, spewing off light. Now, that's only very close around there. It rapidly falls off and obviously doesn't melt the bulb. But there's a very small spark, and that's where the incandescence comes from, is the temperature of that bulb there. So fortunately, they found a metal that doesn't evaporate and burn up and explode when you make it that hot, and that's tungsten. And you put that in the bulb with a nice little gas, and you're good to go. And of course, we won't go into details, but that's basically how it works. Now, with that in mind, that's where this term color temperature comes from. When you see the term, you know, so many kelvins, and all EEs probably know kelvins or just another unit of temperature, but just in case, kelvins are roughly Fahrenheit plus a few hundred, I believe. So you just add a few hundred degrees and you get to convert from kelvins to Fahrenheit. Again, not that important, but just remember that kelvins is a unit of temperature. And that temperature, when you hear it specified for a color of white, is actually the color of the temperature of that incandescent bulb to get that color white. So temperature color. If you haven't made that relationship by now, I can say that a few more times. So basically, your miniature lamps, because they're smaller, they actually don't run as hot as your standard incandescent bulbs like you have in the room here or other fixtures. And they tend to be about 2,500 degrees, which is why they're more warm and the warmer yellowish color versus the cooler blue colors. So 2,500 is probably the number to keep in your head. Your typical household bulb is about 2,800 kelvins. And then your typical fluorescent bulb, which are more bluish, are the equivalent of a 5,000 Kelvin incandescent bulb. And just as a side, that's why TV studio lights are so hot, because they want them to be a wider color, so they do make them hotter. So with that in mind, now keep in mind, now LEDs and flush and bulbs actually use a different mechanism for making light, so they don't burn things, or make them hot, rather. And so that's why they have to use an equivalent incandescent temperature, which is pretty universally understood. So in the LED market, earlier generation LEDs were actually over as high as 9,000 kelvins equivalent. So basically, you're looking at, you know, the equivalent of what looks like fluorescent bulbs or really bluish-looking bulbs in your game. And only recently have we seen the technology improve so that the LEDs more emulate closely to the natural, appears natural color of regular lamps. So the terms they're associated are warm and cool. So again, it's actually inversely proportional to what's actually going on inside the bulb, as it turns out. But just for us, red is a warm color, blue is a cool color, because ice is blue, you know, et cetera. So there's no rhyme or reason to that. It's just what people, how do they remember it? Now, when you look at the spectrum of an incandescent bulb, it's very interesting. So what we're basically looking here is what the color of the light is, all the way down to infrared, or if you go up past ultraviolet all the way up higher frequencies, versus the amount of energy expended to make those frequencies. What happens with incandescent bulbs is that you're just spewing out tons of energy as heat or infrared or things that you can't see, and that's why they're so inefficient. Whereas you take an LED, LED is very efficient in terms of this light output. It only puts out that one color that it's specified as, depending on the chemistry of the LED. And you're not wasting any heat in the visible spectrum. Now, there is some heat generated in the diode itself, but that's a different mechanism. But it's a lot less than the heat that you're spewing out from the incandescent bulb. Now, if you want to make one of the challenges with LEDs is that it's very easy to make single spectrums of colors. You make a red, a blue, a yellow. The way the chemistries work out, it's very easy to do those, but it's very hard to make a white color. And so early on, the way you made a white LED was you took three LEDs and you put them together, red, green, and blue. Now, if all you remember your 7th grade science class, when you mix red, green, and blue together, you get white. For us in South Carolina, this is like a senior level class, but yeah, you get the idea. So that's all basics right there. Now, the problem is that you now have three LEDs, and for all the engineers in the room, we're all thinking, man, that's going to be more expensive, and it is. And that's why that's not really used that often, because you're adding three times the cost. So clever chemists got together, and I'm sure there's some engineers involved as well, to make the phosphor-based white LEDs that use only one LED. And the trick is you take a blue LED, you throw a little phosphor on there, which basically will take that blue light and convert it to other light. This is the same way that fluorescent lamps work, basically. And you get a white color out of there. So basically that takes that blue LED and stretches out that spectrum down to other colors, and you get more or less a white color. Now, it's not exact. I drew an approximation of the spectrum here. This is not scientific at all. But to give you the idea that you're going to get some spikes and peaks in there, depending on what chemistries and how it's put together, and a bunch of other little fine-tuning factors that have been improving over the years. So early on, this is why a lot of the white LEDs look bluish, is because that blue peak was a lot higher than the phosphor, and you ended up with really bluish LEDs. So the technology has improved, so now the spectrum is pretty good, and a good white LED that's warm is very, very impressive. So basically what the key point of all this mechanisms and all these how it works is that the difference between cool and white LED, cool and warm LEDs. Now, some folks actually prefer the cool color, especially some of like the sci-fi themed games and some other artwork that goes well with those colors. But in general, especially if you're doing EM games, the blue LEDs are completely out of place. So you definitely want to look out for those warm LEDs when you are buying these. It's one of the key considerations when you are purchasing these LEDs. So yeah, if you try and maintain that factory original color, go for the warm white LEDs. That's basically the key thing to take away here. Now, number two, polarization. I put it in quotes because as an engineer, that bothers me. Generally, we like talked about the polarity itself. The polarization has to do with other sunglasses and stuff. But in general, we've seen the term, so I'll run with it. But basically, the LED, the problem polarization is the way that LEDs work. So who remembers what LED stands for? Double E's, don't raise your hands. Just shout it out. Light emitting diode. And that's the problem part, is that diode part, right? So again, the EEs know how this works, but just in case you don't, this is the schematic symbol for an LED, depending on which schematic you're reading, but good enough for now. Basically, the LED lights up when you pass direct current, so it's not alternating, like a battery, through the diode. The problem is that works fine one way, but it does not work the other way. And diodes are basically one-way gates. this is just the nature of the way it works, and I'm not going to go into details for one, I don't remember exactly, but two, it's not that important for this discussion. Basically, the problem that we see is with the nature of LEDs is that if you put it in backwards, it's not going to turn on. That's the short end of the story there. And the term that's cropped up in the industry is the term, these LEDs are polarized. In other words, a regular plain LED is by default polarized. So you'll see that term on websites. Even at Marker, we sometimes put that on the description depending on which LED it is. But basically, if you put that LED in backwards, it's not going to work. Now, on a wedge base bulb, this is not a problem. If it doesn't work, you just flip it around, drop it back in, and it'll turn on. Most LEDs, especially the voltages that are in pinball machines, you're not going to break it by putting it in backwards. The LEDs won't light. Now, with where you run into problems with bayonet-based bulbs, which are really common in the old EM games and some other areas, and in this case, you're going to have a problem if your polarity is incorrect. In general, most games... Oops, I'm going to get back here. Yeah. I got too hoppity with my clicking. So most games are... The positive terminal is the tip, especially for feature lamps and other things like that. But every once in a while, you're going to run to a game or it is switched for whatever reason. Maybe somebody rewired it funny, or that designer was having a bad day and just didn't care. Who knows? But there was no the key thing is there's no standard in pinball machines to say that positive tip is going to be positive, because they're incandescent lamps. They didn't really care. It's going to work no matter what. We've occasionally run into actual suppliers that made LEDs with this flipped. So keep your heads up for those. They're not going to work most of the time. A marker, we make sure not to carry those, but every once in a while, somebody will sell those on eBay or something, so just keep an eye out for them. And just basically verify the polarity of your game before you go to plug that in. So you're not going to, again, on general illumination, you're not going to have a problem. That's alternating current, vast majority of machines. But for some feature lamps, you're going to see some issues there, and also with flashers and some other bulbs that do use direct current. There is a solution, and you'll see this term, engineers... we'll call it rectification. Non-engineers will call it non-polarization, so we'll get a bunch of knots and flippity-flopping. But basically, just keep in mind that when you see the term non-polarized, this is actually a better bulb, even though it's got a negative word in it, they add what's called a bridge rectifier. So engineers, again, you know what that is. For non-engineers, it's a magic device that flips the current either way into the correct direction. Okay, so they actually put this into the bulb. It's a tiny little package, which is actually four more diodes that they put inside the bulb to make sure that it works correctly. And we'll talk about this also helps out the strobing problem. We'll talk about that in a second. But more importantly, you don't have to worry about those bulbs not working. So when in doubt, just go ahead and buy a non-polarized or rectified bulb, and it will definitely turn on in your game. And this has been a recent innovation. Several suppliers that have started including them. They are slightly more expensive, but they are going to cause you a lot less headaches, and you just don't have to worry about it when you go to do your game. And that brings us to the infamous problem of strobing, which I don't think anybody really thought about until they actually got the LEDs into the game the first time. So first of all, what is strobing? It's the effect of lighting up something while it's moving, and you end up seeing a nice little dot pattern in the process. So again, if you throw a tennis ball through a strobe light, it's a pretty cool effect, and it's fun at parties, but when you go to play pinball, not so much. Here I actually took time and found a game with LEDs in it. And if you look at the fast shots, you'll actually notice the strobe, and the camera managed to pick it up here. The prevailing theory is that the human eye does and sense things at over 60 hertz frame rates, which is partially true, as it turns out. In the case of flickering LEDs, you can actually notice the pinball strobing there. Now, granted, my camera only captures at 30 frames per second, but you still can see some strobing there. And in fact, I grabbed a frame for you. So you can even see right here, you can see a little strobing there, and I actually... got one really up close, a high-speed shot. Looks like you got five pinballs for a second there. So you don't really notice it, but your peripheral vision picks up on it, and it will drive you nuts, generally, especially if your eyes tend to be more sensitive. So if you get bothered by old CRTs back in the day, you're going to be bothered by the strobing LEDs in this case. So now why is that happening there? First, remember how incandescent bulbs are. Here's a video of an incandescent bulb turning on and off. Whoops, if I actually clicked it. So basically, an incandescent bulb, when it turns on and off, if you see, it really doesn't turn on and off instantly. There's a ramp-up time and a ramp-down time there. The filament has to get warm before it starts spewing off light. And it has to cool down, so that's a gradual process, relatively speaking. So this is an indicator light there. Now, if you go look at the equivalent LEDs, they turn on and off instantly. basically, relatively speaking. Now, designers took advantage of this back in the day, and it turns out that because of that slow nature, you can put alternating current through an incandescent bulb. It'll stay turned on because it doesn't have time to turn off between the positive and the negative there. So when you take a voltage over time, and you turn on the voltage, what you're going to see, the light output of the incandescent bulb is going to ramp up and then ramp down, which is kind of an inconvenient behavior in some cases, but for pinball machines, it turned out to be very convenient because when you put alternating current on there, which is what comes out of the wall and is cheap, that bulb's going to stay turned on. So it doesn't really ramp down that much. It does go down a little bit, but it's imperceptible to your average person. Now, the problem with LEDs is you put that same LED on that same AC current, you're just getting a little strobe light now. That's only on part of the time. Because remember, LEDs do not turn on when the current is going the other direction. So basically, when you're below, and when your voltage is negative, the LED is off. Yes, question. Exactly. So I'm getting to that. So this is assuming you have a just plain LED hooked up, and you spoiled my next slide, surprise. So a partial solution here is you can halfway rectify it and put the rectifier in there. So basically, when you put a rectifier in the LED, and you flip the current around, the effect is that the current stays positive the whole time. Now that actually reduces the problem quite a bit, but doesn't eliminate it, as it turns out, because there's this little thing called turn-on voltage with LEDs. LEDs don't turn on until they get to be about 1.3, 1.4 volts, depending on the chemistry in the LED. And the result is you have less flickering. You're now at 120 hertz versus 60 hertz, but you still have a little period of time when that LED is off. So what we've seen is when you use a rectified bulb, it does reduce the flickering effect quite a bit, and it makes it pretty tolerable for the most part. But if you're a perfectionist and you look carefully, you still might notice it. And that can bother some people. So basically, when it comes to the general illumination side of things, and when we say GI, we're talking about the outside lamps that are always on in the game, just to make sure we're on the same page. There's actually a potential solution there. So GI in general runs off of alternating current, and the reason being it's cheap to do that. Again, designers assumed they were going to be using incandescent bulbs, so all they did is took a transformer, took the wall voltage, shrunk it, and called it a day. To convert that into DC would have cost more money and then had the same effect of lighting the bulbs up, so they didn't bother with that back in the day. So that's why all your GI in general tends to be AC. And I think there might be a couple exceptions with some games, but in general you're looking at a flickering problem. So one of the potential solutions is basically the easy way to fix this, use the polarized bulbs, and that will get you by. There's also some folks that will actually switch out the power supply and put DC on your general illumination. So the notion of DC general illumination is popular. There's actually some products out that do that. In fact, depending on the game and depending on how the general illumination circuit is, and you can actually swap out the power supply. We've heard of some people that actually take PC power supplies, put them in their games, and use those to drive their general illumination circuits. That's a bit of a hack. I'm not going to encourage that because I'm not going to be responsible if you don't do it right. But you can look it up online. People have done it. Or we're starting to carry some products now. There's some folks starting to make products that actually convert, do a proper AC-DC conversion inside the game. And so you can use those. And what we've seen is classic Bally Stearns work well for this. Some early Williams System 3 through 11s tend to work well, Data East, and the new Stern games all take well to converting the AC to DC. So you can get a little $99 adapter board, drop it in, ta-da, you have DC. This tends to work well. Something to keep in mind, though, is these DC supplies do heat up a little bit, so if you're going to put a DC supply in game, make sure you put LEDs in, too, otherwise you might overheat the DC supply, because they're generally designed for lower power outputs. In case you ask, most WPC games do not take well with this because they had circuits in them to dim the general illumination. And when you throw a DC supply on top of those circuits, it doesn't get pretty. So not compatible with those just now. We're still looking at ways to fix that.
Which games were those?
WPC games in general. They use what's called a triax to adjust the brightness of the bulbs. But it works by chopping up the voltage and it doesn't convert well, basically. Now, for feature lamps, things get really interesting. When we say feature lamps, we're talking about all the little guys in the play field that turn individually on and off. Feature lamps can also flicker. Now, the good news is that flicker on fuchsia lamps is not as noticeable because they're not on most of the time, or if they are, there's enough general illumination that you're not the ball stay lit up. So in general, you notice flicker when all the light in the game is flickering, versus if only a few lights are flickering, you probably won't notice it, except maybe when the ball rolls right over that spot. And the reason this is that a lot of games use lamp matrices to control it. To control the lamps. And again, they took advantage of the fact that incandescent bulbs only turn on when the voltage is high. Incandescent bulbs stay on longer, even after you turn on through the voltage for a little bit. So they're able to strobe and get more boards. More bulbs controlled with fewer transistors, which saves money. Now, the problem is that when you put LEDs in and you're strobing a bunch of bulbs, you're going to notice that strobing. There's several solutions on the market for that. Unfortunately, the fixes is you have to make the lamp controller strobe faster. And it's not easy to hack a game to do that. So really the only easy, proper way to fix that is to replace whatever is controlling those lamps with something that does it faster. So there are actually a number of products on the market that will take, you can replace the lamp driver board, which will update the lamps more quickly, and you won't notice a flicker anymore. There's some available for Classic, Bally, and Sterns right now, and the rumor has that there's some folks working on hacking the later Williams games to update their strobe rates to be faster as well. Just a reminder, basically the way these lamp matrices work is they have 16 total transistors, but they turn on they turn them all on in sequence to control up to 64 bulbs. So it's a cost-saving measure, basically, in games. So you don't have to put 64 transistors in the game. So, yeah, and basically, well, I got ahead of myself here, but the game software controls the strobing in a lot of the newer games, and the older games is controlled by the hardware design on the board. So there may be some hacks out there. In fact, y'all might know better than I do, because I don't encourage hacking games, but if you do, you might be able to get some updated firmware for some games that fix the problem in some cases. But one of the things we've seen, though, with all this is that even though it's hard to fix the feature lamp strobing, if you get your DC strobing your general illumination strobing under control, you're not going to really be bothered by feature lamp strobing, is the moral of the story here. Now, last topic I'm going to get to is ghosting. And just real quickly, I'm going to touch on this because it's very particular to the Williams games and maybe some other models. But if you think back again to the problem of lamps take a while to turn on, is that for flasher lamps, you want those to flash nice and bright and not take a long time to turn on because that diminishes the effect of the flash. So what Williams did from System 3 to 11, I believe, is they added what was called a warming circuit to the game. And basically what they do is they trick a little bit of voltage through the bulbs all the time just to keep the filaments warm. So right before they would start glowing, they would just keep them hot. And this has the nice byproduct of it reduces the time to turn on the bulbs. So that really made the Williams System 3 through 11 games really pop. You know, they'd flash and, you know, it was like a little party in there. But the side effect of that is when you go to put an LED in, it turns on and doesn't turn off. And you're going, well, this sucks. So there's a solution to that, one which I don't advocate. The easy solution is don't bother, leave incandescent bulbs in there. The hard solution is you can go in there and take that warming circuit out. Again, I'm not going to condone it, but if you want to go online and find out which resistor to pull out that happens to be big, white, and rectangular, you can figure that out. So it depends on how adventurous you are in updating your game there. And then once you do that, the LEDs will actually turn off correctly, and life is good again. So basically, just to sum up all these points here that I've made, the color temperature is one of the key things to look at when you're buying your LEDs. Always stick, in general, if you're not sure what you want, go with the warm ones. They're going to be better looking, more natural, closer to that incandescent look. With polarity, you want to buy what are called non-polarized LEDs, or as engineers call them, rectified LEDs. And those are going to be less likely to flicker or be noticeable flickering, and they're definitely going to work. You don't have to worry about them flipping around and not working if the polarity is wrong on your socket for some reason. And for reducing strobing, consider using DCGI boards, as the short acronym for that, DC General Illumination Boards. Stick with the rectified LEDs, it'll make them strobe not as badly. And if you can, update the software on your game, if you can figure that out, or up by one of the newer lamp driver boards, that will increase the strobe rate and you won't notice it. So in general, with human vision, if it's over about 200 or 300 hertz, you probably won't catch it. with a fast moving ball. So, anyway, that pretty much comes to the end of the engineered presentation I have for you. But if you have any questions or want to discuss anything, you got me for a few more minutes at least, I believe. Yes, we're on time. So, yeah, question up here.
Yeah. Why would you say the current development of pinball, LEDs in general, is going? Is it towards producing better colors, producing more light output, better spread? What's coming up?
So the question was, where's the direction of LED development going? Pretty much. It's interesting because I actually used to study this back a couple of years ago, and really a lot of the research focus on LEDs today, just in the industry in general, not just pinball, is getting higher power output and more efficiency out of LEDs. Funny thing is LEDs really aren't that efficient, as it turns out, compared to fluorescent bulbs. They're getting there, and actually they, either this year, last year, or next year, somewhere soon, they're going to become more efficient than fluorescent bulbs, which wasn't the case until recently. So really efficiency is the major research area, and also that getting that white color better output, more full spectrum, less spiky. That's where really the major focus is. Because the blue LEDs, that is a big innovation about, I guess, 10, 15 years ago. Yeah, I'm sure if you bought a gadget in the last 10 years, it's got a blue LED in there because they can. It's new and different. And the other big focus area, of course, is driving that cost down. Cost is king, especially for LED adoption. And now we're starting to see it's starting to come over where it's now more attractive in general to design in an LED than to design in a incandescent bulb. So right now for an aftermarket, LEDs are definitely cheap enough. Yeah, I'll spend an extra dollar. That's fine. But they still have to get further cheaper for them to become standard equipment on the games. You'll probably see that in the next couple of years. They'll finally cross that threshold and really put the nail in the coffin for incandescent bulbs. So, the whole another area which I didn't really get into is the actual dispersion of LED light. The difference between LEDs and incandescent bulbs is LEDs come off a very point source of light versus incandescents kind of have a broader, softer source of light. So the end result is that you end up with, you have this harsh direct light and you want to emulate a regular bulb to get that softer, not hard edges on your play field and shadows being cast. And so there's a lot of different technologies how to spread that light out efficiently without being inefficient about it. So you don't want to block it all completely, but you also want to diffuse it. So there's a lot of research there as well. So that's my long-winded answer. Does that answer your question? That's a good question, actually. Probably best one I've had set yet. Anybody else? Any other questions? You ask me where to buy them? Well, you know that already, but... There's an LED vendor of the show here, CoinTaker. We sell a lot of their stuff. So you can actually go see. They have quite an impressive spread over there. It's like a holiday platter party. You know, hundreds of LEDs. Take a look at that. But I think they may have been one of the first, if not the first vendor, to put that rectifier in that bulb, at least in the pinball bulbs. So I know they've invested a lot in banking the pinball-compatible LEDs because the very specific packages, right, for pinball that they're not used many other places. But yeah, most of our stuff is good. Yeah, right over here.
Are there any commercial products out or coming out that address the ramp, the time on and time off on the LEDs? I know there's some possible solutions to that, like adding capacitors and some other.
Yeah, the engineering solution to. It's funny because normally that's a desirable trait of the LED is the turn on time. But for pinballs, we want that to be slower. The engineering solution is to add a capacitor to the LED. Right now, I know there's been some research there, but basically the conclusion, at least so far, has been it's too expensive and won't fit inside the bulb. You need a fairly large capacitor to do that, which tends to be the size of the bulb itself. So if you're adventurous, you can add your own capacitor to the LED. That may have some consequences. Another way, I have to sit down and look at it, but I've heard of some folks experimenting with that, but near term, I don't think you're going to see anything for that. So most people are focusing their efforts on reducing the actual source of the strobing at the base instead of trying to distribute the solution throughout the game. So, a very good question, actually. So, yeah, to give you a few more seconds to think a witty question, try to attack me or something. Politicians, no? All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for your time. Hope you picked up something today, and have fun at the show.